A few weeks ago, we reported on a crisis in the recycling industry. Earlier this year, China announced policy changes that restrict its imports of U.S. recyclables, changes with tremendous implications since a third of U.S. recycling exports have historically gone to China. FM89's Carrie Klein explored those policy changes in May, speaking with local recycling companies and policy experts about what's changed and how to find new markets for all that plastic and paper we can no longer ship overseas.
So what does this crisis reveal about the robustness and the fragility of the recycling industry in California and across the U.S.? I got to ask these questions of Kate O'Neill, a professor of environmental science, policy, and management at UC Berkeley, who's currently writing a book on the global waste trade. So, Kate, let's start with some of the basics of recycling. The U.S. exports about a third of its recycling, and roughly a third of that goes to China. At least it had until earlier this year. What happens to the U.S.'s recyclables once they leave our shores?
So they get shipped overseas. They get exported by brokers, not necessarily the original companies that produce the waste. And when they arrive at their destination, they are sent ideally for recycling, but possibly also for dumping or other forms of cheap disposal like incineration, and that poses a variety of risks for the people who are working on or living around those sites.
And in China in particular, though, you know, especially when it comes to plastics, a lot of that material, at least the recycling that we send over there, has been recycled right into a lot of the other plastics that they end up exporting as other goods.
Yes, there's quite a bit of evidence that it has been recycled. Foreign plastic scrap is for sure better quality than plastic scrap produced in China, and China's own production of plastics has been far lower than what it needs. The qualification is that we really don't know under what conditions a lot of this recycling has happened, whether it's in recycling yards, scrap yards, where it's being reprocessed by workers who are not protected by safety equipment, or recycled in such a way that generates a lot of fumes or environmental damage or waste that will leach into the ground or the water supply. So the answer is mixed. I mean, I think that China is well known to have a very high recycling rate across the board, and so do many developing countries, much more so than we do. So there is that upside. The downside is we're never quite sure exactly how or to what extent that recycling is happening in a country like China, which is not particularly transparent.
And so the U.S. at least, you know, certainly prides itself on trying to recycle as much as it can. Of course, here in California, there's a state law on the books that that says by 2020 we have to recycle 75% of our waste. You know, is that a contradiction if we're collecting all this material here, but then still sending large amounts of it overseas for them to then take care of?
It's a paradox, and it's one that I think we're now being forced to face, as some people have been talking about it for a long time, is that when we talk about zero waste or these percentages of reducing waste, what often people are talking about is avoiding diversion to landfill, which is a very good goal, but that means that there's actually been less consideration of, well, if it doesn't go to landfill, where does it go? And this case of where now we're realizing how much of it gets shipped abroad or to places where we don't know how it's being recycled, it's certainly causing people to really think about and confront some of the issues with zero waste or increased diversion rate policies that we're seeing.
And so if we do end up continuing to find other international markets to kind of make up for the deficit left behind by China, accepting few of our recyclables, would this just be, you know, another example of an industry that is outsourcing itself to other parts of the world with maybe less accountability and less responsibility?
Yes, I think there's a very real danger in that. I mean, there historically always has been. I mean, typically when we think about outsourcing, we think about manufacturing things like clothing, things like electronics that get manufactured overseas under conditions that are often extremely bad and that a lot of NGOs are campaigning against. And I think there has been less attention to what happens at the other end. So these goods are produced in China, they get shipped to us, and then when we throw them out, they get shipped back for recycling and dismantling. And that, again, is a part of this whole loop that we haven't really thought about as part of package of this whole product life cycle. And some of the problems have been solved with transparency measures and programs and monitoring and verification and working with the governments and with the, particularly with the multinational corporations who are producing those clothes, who are selling, designing and selling those clothes. The problem is, of course, here we don't have a Nike or a Gap or some other big brand, an Apple or an HP, to target. And that's been what's been effective, is to say, okay, you multinational, we're going to challenge your reputation, we're going to rally consumers against you if you don't change your practices. There's nothing like that in the waste industry. All of that push comes from a variety of different levels. There's a lot of different targets, and it's unclear that how easy it's going to be collectively to change those practices.
So you've touched upon electronic waste, and certainly there's been lots of reporting and lots of revelations about e-waste. Is the same thing happening here with the recycling industry? Could you just compare and contrast these two industries for us?
Yes and no. Yes, there are a lot of parallels. It is in many ways, you know, it's the same thing where we take our trash and we distance it. I think that there's some critical differences. One of which is that some of these electronics contain many more dangerous substances than even plastic or certainly than paper. And certainly metals are stripped from cell phones or iPads or other kinds of electronics using acid and other kind of dangerous techniques. So there's definitely, I think, a more direct sense of hazard there. The electronics trade is certainly spread out among more countries. It goes to even poorer jurisdictions in parts of Africa where there are even fewer controls. And so the problem that we're dealing with is definitely more diffuse around the world. The difference on the other side is that these e-waste are produced by the large corporations, by Apple, by HP, by other Dell and others. So those corporations can be directly targeted by action groups, activists, and regulators, so that they, if they change their behavior, then we'll start seeing changes down the line. The other thing is that it's more easy to see product redesign to make electronics safer, to make them last longer. All of these things that have been ignored in the sort of rush to sell people more and more iPhones, iPads, et cetera. And also potentially to make them safer to repair or refurbish, or easier to repair and refurbish. And if that's the case, then they can be shipped abroad more easily, because if they're just being repaired rather than stripped down or reprocessed in ways that are dangerous, then you're creating a market for these goods in Africa, in Asia, and in other parts of the world. So what's going on with China is actually China's attitude towards scrap is and e-waste has been a little similar, in that it has really sought to clean up its act domestically as well by acknowledging that recycling happens, trying to stop imports, I think a lot less successfully than they have with plastic and scrap, and formalizing its informal sector in terms of trying to kick out the informal businesses that might be family-run that are doing this disassembling and cleaning and selling on, to create a cleaner, quote-unquote, industry that's more easy to control and certainly appears much better to Chinese people and indeed to the rest of the world.
And some recycling industry stakeholders, of course, would argue that the way that we've set up this industry to export a large portion of this material overseas, that is simply the way that a market works, that this is, it's not actually a waste product. It becomes a commodity because we have too much of it and other countries need it. Where is there space for that argument here as well?
Absolutely. I've had some conversations with people recently who are like, you should never use the word waste, which is not something I agree with totally, because some things are bad and should be gotten rid of. But I think that framing is something that can be very helpful when it comes to deciding what we do with these substances, whether they're side streams, byproducts, secondary products. There's a lot of different ways you can think about waste. Again, what I'm trying to do in my book is to really come up with a framing for that way to think about waste that makes sense. So, there is a market. The market is not a bad thing. In fact, it's actually necessary for recycling systems to be effective. There's got to be someone who's going to buy the scrap. And you can make the case that we don't use that scrap. It's used in manufacturing in other parts of the world. So there really shouldn't be absolute bans and restrictions on the movement of scrap, because banning the export of scrap would be almost as counterproductive, if not more so, than other countries banning its import.
And so this whole conversation is couched in the fact that China has recently been shifting its policies on what kind of recycling it's going to be importing from around the world. And so, you know, what do you foresee happening to recycling, to the recycling industries, to jurisdictions that regulate it, in the U.S. and globally?
So I think, as many people in the industry and in regulatory agencies say, we are looking at a long-term rethink of how we in this country and other parts of the world actually deal with our recycling, even to the extent of fundamentally reshaping how consumers themselves, how households themselves deal with their recyclables. So we're seeing at the curb level, we're seeing higher prices, we're seeing changes in what can or cannot be picked up. At the local regulatory level, at the level of the companies that collect and sort those materials close to site, they're really trying to look at how they can build better technology, where they can find the money to build that better technology to clean and sort recyclables. This is going to be quite challenging given how local a lot of these facilities are and whether or not they will need to be scaled up or consolidated. So those are going to be issues that will be quite important. And then at the global level, we'll still be moving towards finding new destinations, towards cleaning up the scrap that does get sent and trying to keep track of the volume of waste that we produce and the volumes that we can actually deal with. Over the even longer term, there's some conversations going on at all levels about how we actually reduce the output of waste and use the resources, the scarce resources we have, more efficiently to try and avoid the problems that have emerged out of China's decision to restrict scrap imports.
And so we're all scrambling right now, but it sounds like there could be some good to come out of this, some positive changes for the long term.
I would hope so. I mean, you know, we often have experiences of these sorts of events that everyone gets everyone all exercised and needing to change, and then after a while everyone forgets and it's business as usual. I don't think this is the case here, just because rubbish and trash is so very present and with us. I mean, we are still generating it in large quantities, and it is showing up at ports, at recycling facilities, and very visibly these places are filling up with piles of plastic and paper scrap, which creates an urgency to really come up with solutions that will work over the longer term fairly quickly. I suspect that the recycling industry itself is, although they don't want what's happening right now, is quite excited about the possibility of having new and better technology, ways of making recycling more effective. I know that they were not very happy with the quality of the materials that were passing through their facilities either.
Something to keep an eye on. Kate O'Neill, thanks so much for speaking with me.
All right. Thank you.
That was Valley Public Radio's Carrie Klein speaking with Kate O'Neill, a professor of environmental science, policy, and management at UC Berkeley. She's written two books on waste, the environment, and international relations, and is currently working on a third.